In this pivotal podcast, we're going to hear from Jane Powell. Now, she's played cricket for England, played hockey for England. She's coached England at World Cups and Olympics, both at cricket and at hockey, both the seniors and the pathway. She's also coached England lacrosse as their performance director and is currently the ECB performance director for disability cricket, but also the first ever female president of Yorkshire County Cricket Club. Now, Jane's got many pivotal experiences, but one particular one that she references is when she took her 11 plus and she didn't have any PE kit, but she was judged by her coach and was told she would never make it. Her lessons from this is don't get angry, work hard, prepare yourself, and particularly know who you are. She's got some great advice for female coaches and particularly for finding information, not just education, and not allowing a qualification to get in the way of your learning. And finally, she gives some examples of how to coach superstars. Jane's main message is about developing respect, kindness, and courage as a coach.
For all the small people and the tall people, for the dispossessed and the observed, for the brokenhearted and the recently departed, for the unloved and the unheard.
Mother Nature don't draw straight lines, broken molds in a grand design. We look a mess, but we're doing fine. We can't carry lifelong members of the union of different kinds.
Okay, so this is a podcast with Jane Powell, and Jane, we know each other for a long time, but would you tell us a little bit about what you would like us to know about you?
That's a very interesting one, because I think the older you get, the more there is to tell about what you've done. So I started life really as a cricketer and hockey player. So I, at school, I was certainly doing both, but I made my name probably as England cricket captain, and certainly that's how we came into contact. We played cricket against each other many years ago. So that's who I was when I started, and you know, then I've had a lifetime of sport. So I became a PE teacher, then I went on to work in sport full time. Mainly because the head teacher told me that he wanted somebody who could carry the school forward for the next 10 years. And he didn't think that I was that person, and it's quite fascinating really, because since that time I've done so much that I think, wow, I wonder what he didn't see in me that other people have seen in me. So that's quite an interesting topic in itself. But gone on to work in England hockey, England lacrosse, which was a nice little brief sojourn, and now back to England ECB, to England cricket. So that's where I am at the moment.
You're a very humble person, I know that, so I'm going to draw some of this out. You've actually scored a Test 100?
Yes.
Who was that against?
That was against India. I wasn't selected for the first Test, so the great Jeanette Britton broke her thumb in the first Test, so I was called in for the second Test. You say I'm humble, but I was like, oh, I should have played in the first Test as well. So I got an opportunity in the second Test and scored 115 not out. So I can remember scoring the 100 and waving my bat towards the selectors and saying, drop me now.
And did they?
No. So that was, you know, it's all about taking your opportunity when you're given it, because I think sometimes in life we can sort of look at things and go, oh, I could have done that, I could have done that. But when we get that opportunity, it's up to us to take it. So I think I did that quite well. So.
But I think it would be fair to say you have ridden the river of performance very successfully, because you've been to some Olympic Games, coached through...
Yeah, I should have gone to the 1980 Olympic Games, but Russia invaded Afghanistan, so some things never change. Interestingly, Zimbabwe won the hockey gold medal that year. We went out to play them the year after and we beat them 3-0, and I scored all three goals.
Wow.
But they've still got the Olympic gold medal. So I thought that was my Olympic journey over, because then I went more into cricket. But then it just so happened that I was then head of coaching at England Hockey for Beijing and for London Olympics. So I felt like I had my Olympic experience given back to me there, where I was just basically overseeing Danny and Jason with the men's and women's squads. And yeah, it was a great experience to be involved in that as well. So yes, I've been to World Cups in cricket, played in a World Cup final, captained England in a World Cup final, and then coached England cricket, and then coached England hockey teams under 18, under 21. I was coaching at the time when Helen Richardson Walsh played as an under 18. So I've been very, you know, it's nice because I look at the names that are coming out now, and in cricket, Isha Gore, Ebony, Claire Connor, Lucy Pearson, and I coached all of those at some stage, when I was coaching England cricket or coaching England hockey teams. So it's lovely to have that network of people that you know and that you feel that you've had an impact on at some stage. I'm not going to claim that it was all through me, because I think we're all victims or successors of every single influence that has come across us. So yes, I've been lucky. And then as you know, I took a little journey into lacrosse. Mm. And interestingly, I think the first thing that anybody ever said to me was, "What do you know about lacrosse?" So I've had challenges along the way as well, but very successful England lacrosse.
I think we should highlight that. So when you left England lacrosse, just tell for the pod, where were they? Where did they end up?
Well, England lacrosse were European champions at senior men's, senior women's, under 20 men's, under 20 women's. So 4 times European champions. Five, box lacrosse as well. And then the senior women were bronze medal at the World Championships. The men were 5th. The junior girls were bronze medalists, and the junior boys were 6th. And the box lacrosse were 4th place. So, yeah, pretty successful as a sport.
And that's it's not a highly funded sport, I wouldn't say. It was something where you've got to take your skills of development, performance, leadership, coaching, all those skills together in order to get people who are not being paid to produce high performance.
Yes, and you know, I've often said, you know, I've talked a lot about pride, personal responsibility and delivering excellence, and that comes whether you've got money or you've not got money, because it's about an attitude and it's about an application. And so, yeah, I spent a lot of time with the lacrosse people stressing that. And I think if you speak to any junior girl in lacrosse who was involved, they'll all know exactly what pride stands for. So I think sometimes it's just about motivating people to give their best. And if you give your best, it's an attitude of thing, not a financial thing.
Yeah.
Money helps.
Well, it's an enabler, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
One of your proudest achievements, being born in the county of Yorkshire, is that you're the first ever female president of Yorkshire. How did that come about, and how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I'm still struggling to come over that one, really. So it was in March the 17th or something like that, that Tanny Gray Thompson rang me, and there's another humble lady who, she phoned me and said, "It's Tanny Gray Thompson here, you don't know me." And I went, "Well, I know who you are," because, you know, I think we all know Tanny Gray Thompson. And she said, "We'd like to recommend you to be president of Yorkshire." And I was like, wow, you know, because 160 plus years, it's always been men. So I didn't even think that it was a role that was a possibility. So it had never crossed my, I'd never thought about it, to be quite honest, but felt very, very honoured to be highlighted to be the first female president, because I realised the importance of it for other girls coming through, and the importance of making sure people see that females not only can do this role, but they can do it very well. And so, you know me very well, so you'll know that I'm spending every hour, spare hour I can, trying to promote Yorkshire and trying to do things. I've already been to the Chamber of Commerce and to awards evenings and to schools and to the NHS, spoken to the NHS in Calderdale. And, you know, just promoting the fact that Yorkshire is a county that people can trust in again, Yorkshire County Cricket Club, because it's been through quite a rough period, so.
Yeah, and that's why it's so pertinent to chat to you in my role at Wales, head of performance coaching, to talk about, you know, what made you the person you are, because you're not just a coach, you've done coaching, leadership, performance, and now administration. So it brings us to the topic of the conversation, which is pivotal experiences. And do you feel there has been one big experience or a series of them, or where would you see it?
I think looking back, there are series of moments that have had influence on you. Right back to when I was 11 years old and just past the 11 plus, as we had to do in those days, to grammar school, and turned up for my first PE lesson. And I didn't have any PE kit at the time. I'm a twin, so mum and dad had struggled to buy the school uniform and couldn't afford the PE kit. And we had to get in bits and bobs as we went along. There weren't Tesco's and Sainsbury's selling two shirts for a fiver as there are now. And it was all bespoke kit, as all schools like to do, don't they? So you can't just get standard stuff. So I turned up to my first PE lesson, and the teacher said to me, "You'll never be any good at PE because you've got no kit." And I just thought, wow, you know, looking back, I mean, I had the choice, didn't I? I could either agree with her or I could say, no, you're wrong. I didn't say, no, you're wrong, because that wasn't the thing you did in those days. But then played against her at hockey when I was 15, 16. And I can remember everybody shouting at this teacher to mark me. And I can remember her saying, "What do you mean, marker? It's like a blinking cart horse trying to mark Nijinsky." I think Nijinsky had just won the Grand National that year. So, you know, I felt I'd made my mark just by what I'd done then, you know. And I thought, how strange that somebody can judge whether you're any good at something based on something about what you're wearing. And she'd never seen me throw, catch, run. And, you know, I was a very sporty young girl. In those days, they would have called me a tomboy.
Yeah.
I just love sports, so it was crazy to say I'd never be any good.
And listen to you talk about it now, you don't sound angry. But other people might have seen that, I'm going to prove you wrong, and that would be the tale of their life. But I'm not. It doesn't come across like that. How do you think about that?
I mean, I try not to get angry, you know. I speak to a lot of people these days, and I say, look, other people's poor behaviour, don't let it affect who you are. And that's what I've tried to do. And don't get me wrong, I think I've got better at it as I've got older, you know. And now I'm like, I know who I am, and this is who I am, and this is who you'll get. And actually, it doesn't matter who you are, what you do, what you say. It's not going to affect who I fundamentally am. The bad behaviour is your responsibility, not mine. I can only be responsible for myself. You know, I look back now and I've just had the most incredible life journey. You know, I've been to countries that I would never have been to. I've had breakfast with Indira Gandhi, for goodness sake. You know, I mean, I'd never have done that. You know, you've heard me say many times, I'm just a girl from Sheffield. How am I having breakfast with Indira Gandhi? And it comes down to the fact that sport has enabled me to venture into countries and to places that nothing else would. And don't get me wrong, I've had my knocks. I've certainly had my knocks. You know, another pivotal moment was when I applied to be England women's cricket head coach. I'd done an interim thing. At that stage, I'd got a level 4 coaching award. I was the first woman in the world to get the level 4. And I played myself, obviously, for England, captained England. And the interview panel was made up of basically all men. And I didn't know at the time, but the guy that got the role was the son of somebody who was working full-time for ECB. And I didn't get it. And he was a level 2 coach. And he played a bit of second team cricket. And I just thought, wow, you know. And I could have been sad and bitter about that, but it's just like, well, I couldn't have prepared myself any better for that role. And I just thought, well, what will I do next? Fortunately, because I played hockey, then I was asked immediately to go over and coach England under 18 hockey. So I had something to do, but I thought it was sad at the time that with all the investment that other people had put in me and I put in, that I suddenly wasn't using it in the sport that was my first choice.
Can we dig into that a little bit more? Because I think that would be really important for particularly, well, female coaches in Wales, but also perhaps some of the people making those selection decisions, because it sounds to me, and you'll have heard me say this before, that that sounded like a League of Gentlemen moment.
Yes, I think it probably was, you know, but, you know, in those days, we're talking about the early 2000s, I'm sad to say that as a woman, you just sort of accepted that that was going to happen. But, you know, I have a slide that I've used with other people where I've gone county second team player, level two coach, worked in a, and this sounds really bad, but I think he worked in a car showroom, you know, and that I put teacher for 20 years, level four coach, played for England, captained England, which person would you select? To university and school groups that I go to, and they all go, oh, obviously the one on the right, and I go, oh, I forgot to tell you, this one's male and this one's female, and then they're all very upset and annoyed, really, on my behalf, because there was just no comparison, and I think that's, but also I think sometimes we women are not very helpful to our genders either, because I've heard some girls, you know, in hockey clubs around the country, any guy could go up and say, oh, I'll coach you this year, and everybody go, great. Any female that goes, they'd say, well, what do you know about hockey? So there's a presumption that men know more about coaching than women do, just purely from general public, and I don't think that helps us sometimes.
So the wiser, I wouldn't say older, but more experienced Jane Powell, what advice would she offer to a young Welsh Jane Powell who's passionate about rugby?
I think first of all you need to make sure that you present yourself strongly, with authority, with knowledge to back you up, with evidence to back you up, and to make sure that you that the people that you're presenting yourself to do fully understand your commitment to what you're doing, your knowledge base behind you. But, you know, there are times when it's out of your control, you know, and it was out of my control at that time. I had done all that. I presented myself the best I could. And I think ask for feedback, ask them why, see what areas. And then if you really do feel it's unjustified, then give you a ring, John, and say, this is not this is not right. You know, why have I not got this role? And but sometimes it's then for the systems to challenge those people. But as system makers now, then it's important that we give a balanced interview panel, that we have people who understand coaching. You know, how many times in coaching do we have people on those coaching interview panels who don't know anything about coaching? You know, and that's sad, really, because you wouldn't have a doctor role and people being interviewed for a surgeon role and not understanding what they needed to do. So I think that's the key one. I think we all feel that we're coaching experts. We were certainly are on a Saturday when games are taking place. Why are they doing that? Why didn't they put that player on? You know, why didn't he bowl Wokes earlier? Why didn't he do that? You know, so we all feel we're experts, but we need to be aware that we need to have the right people in the right places to do the right.
And knowing your craft, you've already mentioned your first ever level four cricket coach in the world, which is significant. That means you must have done your level one, two, three.
Yes.
You also did a teaching qualification.
Well, yeah, it was even more than that, in so much as I did the old club award and then the advanced award in cricket, and then went back and did the one, two, three, four when they changed, because in those days you couldn't transfer coach awards. No. So I've probably done about six cricket coach awards.
And hockey as well.
Level four hockey as well. So I've done level one, two, three, four hockey.
Right.
I even have a level three lacrosse, you know, so, you know, it's...
Right, so this is really fascinating, and I want to ask you this. You've done all these courses. That sounds like at least 15...
Yeah, easily.
This is a really dangerous question for me to ask you in my role, but I'm going to ask it. Do you feel you learn more through doing than learning, or was it a combination of both? So courses, experience?
I mean, I'll be really honest, a lot of the time I did the courses as a female to have credibility in men's eyes. But having said that, I think anything that you do, you can learn from. And I picked up as much in the informal learning than I did in the formal learning. And I can remember a great moment where we were doing something on ATP and creatine.
What's ATP?
Adenosine triphosphate.
Right, yeah.
And creatine at one stage on a physiology module of a, and I can remember the guy who was presenting said something, he was challenged by somebody on the course going, I need more information on that, because at that stage there were a lot of young players saying they needed to take more creatine.
Yeah.
I remember the presenter saying, oh, you don't need to know that for this, you don't need to know it. And I can remember the guy going, F the qualification, I need the information. And I thought, wow, that summed up to me learning. That's what learning is about, is the qualification may be something we're doing, but I'm here because I want information. And I thought that was a key moment for me about that's absolutely right.
Mm. I heard an expression the other day which said, don't let your qualification get in the way of your learning.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Brilliant. Because I think we learn. And when I went to lacrosse and, you know, they questioned, what do you know about lacrosse? I said, well, I don't know. I know how to play the game, but actually I know a lot more about people and performance.
Yeah.
You know, and the key fundamental that we've always got to remember is we coach people.
Yeah.
We don't coach rugby. We don't coach cricket. We coach people to play rugby or people to play, you know, and I think the mistake we can make, we can become myopic. Is that the right word? You know, where we just look at, this is how you pass the ball. This is how you do a spin pass. This is how you do a, etc. And without looking at the person.
Yeah.
And how did they do it? And I guess that's where my role's changed slightly now, because I'm working with the disability game.
Mm.
So now I am looking at, but how does that person do it? They haven't got a front leg. They've got a prosthetic. So how do I get them to get their weight forward when they've got no major base? You know, so I think that's really key.
That's worth looking more deeply, because now you're coaching people with fundamentally different abilities than you had. You were a high performer in three sports, because we haven't mentioned you also played badminton
for
England.
Yeah.
So you're a triple international
and
a coach. But now you're working with people who have fundamentally different abilities. So this idea, and many coaches feel, is do what I do because I was brilliant. What advice would you give to coaches, perhaps players that are transferring into coaching, who have been really good performers, to then become a great coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's not about what we've done or anything like that. It's about what that person in front of you can do. And I think I've changed my thoughts on it now, because everybody always says communication, and I don't use communication anymore, because we get an overdose of communication. I mean, I don't know how many emails are sitting in my inbox. That's communication. What we need is connection when we're coaching. So it's really important that you connect with that person that you're working with. And to do that, then you've got to look at what they're doing and look at, and then realise, how do they, are they the player that needs the kick up the pants, or are they the player that needs the arm around the shoulder, figuratively speaking? Because I think some people respond better to encouragement and praise. I think we all like a bit of encouragement and praise, if I'm honest. But some people do need to be challenged a bit more and say, you can do better than that.
Mm.
You know, I don't think it's very much kick up the pants as in being nasty. It's about challenging them and making them go forward. But it's about connection. So, you know, even when I'm working with the deaf guys, I'm starting to learn a little bit of sign language now so I can connect a bit better. And by doing that, then I already know that I'm connecting with them. And they're always, you know, they've given me a sign name and it's Boss. You know, so whenever I walk past, they give me the Boss sign, you know, and it's just a real connection. And now I feel I can interject and they're playing and just go, you know, you can do this better. So
one of the areas I think is of interest to lots of coaches is, how do you coach the superstar, the one that has got it all naturally, can do it. But then they arrive at the international arena and they suddenly realise that, I'm really good amongst good players and I stand out, but now I'm against great players. They're all great. It's my first entry into it. So what advice would you give to coaches working with, utter superstars?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, don't be frightened. Don't be fearful of what can I give to them? You can give them loads, because first and foremost, you're looking at them with independent eyes. Often those superstars are lacking in confidence. You don't see that all the time because they have an arrogance about them, and that's what makes them the superstar. But, you know, just look at some objective data and, you know, do they make that pass 10 out of 10 or do they make it at a certain speed? Do they make it at a certain time in the game? When are they at their best and when are they under pressure? Because they will be under pressure, and dealing with pressure is a really interesting one, because it's only when you're under pressure that you can learn to deal with it. And we've all said it many times, you can't simulate it in practice. So you have to do your best to try and simulate it in the best way you can, whether that's putting a clock on them when they're doing something, whether it's challenging them to do so many perfectly. So it's, you have to try and challenge them that way, but be ready to listen and look and watch and see where you feel that they need support, because good players still need support. You know, we've just watched a great test series, you know, and I've seen Steve Smith, who probably is one of the best batter in the world, and he's not really been that fantastically successful. And you could argue that, you know, he probably needed a bit of encouragement at some stage, and maybe, I don't know, every player is different. So I had a great player who played for England under 18 hockey, but she'd get sent off nearly every game because she'd just lose her. She was high performing, but she'd be not very accepting of anything that went against her. And I just took her to one side and I said, look, you're my best player. I don't want you off the field of play, but you've got to just learn to control yourself in those things. Don't let me down. Everybody's telling me I shouldn't be picking you. I shouldn't pick you for the squad, but you are going to make the difference in the next European Championships. And you know, that girl was fantastic. And she said to me, nobody had ever said anything to me about that before. You know, and that's why I say don't be fearful of them. Because because this girl was hot-headed and did things, that people were scared to say anything to her. And I thought, no, because I could see that she wasn't my match winner, but I needed her on the pitch. She's not my match winner if she's sitting on the bench or on the, you know, you've been sent off for 5 minutes. And she responded well to that. So just be honest with players and just have honest conversations with them. Be authentic with them.
And it would probably be remiss of me not to ask you about this, because it is the England and Wales Cricket Board.
It
so
is.
I think I'm allowed to ask the question, because there's been a fundamental shift in the way the England and Wales Cricket Board first team of the men's side. And to be unfair, I think under John Lewis, the women have done something similar. A big shift in, we don't call it a philosophy of play, we call it a credo, a set of beliefs.
Yeah.
Do you have a view on shifting, I'm not going to ask you specifically about the famous Baz Ball, but about how you might help a team to adopt a different style of play?
Yeah, I think it's about honest conversations within the group. I think it's about an agreement within the group that everybody is in favour of it. You know, there's been an interesting topic of discussion about who's been the best wicketkeeper, because Johnny Bairstow has just come back from quite a serious accident, injury, and he's done incredibly to come back to the level he's come back already. You know, I've done the same injury, so I know how long it takes to come back from. I've still got the pins and screws somewhere. If somebody doesn't buy into the philosophy or the credo that you're all wanting to play, then that's very difficult, and probably more difficult in rugby or hockey than it is in cricket, because you can have that outsider. You know, you look at the spin bowlers, they're a different breed to the fast bowlers. So, and you would probably say to me, yeah, but the forwards and the defence, you know, the defence are different. And yes, I take that, but you've all got to buy into it. And I think that's been big. And, you know, I know that Stokes keeps going on about legacy and loyalty. So you have to trust people in your teams to do what you expect them to do. And I think if everybody buys into the same style of play, because I think it's a style of play that we're looking at, then you've got more chance of success. And The only thing I see with England cricket is they're letting people play freely, you know, and they're not being penalised if they fail, i.e. if they get out.
That's the better one to pick up with, because we've all sat in dressing rooms with coaches pre-season, we've done our values, we've done our credo, is this is the way we want to play, and then the first game you lose. And the pressure comes on, and then the
coach changes
certainly a coach feels like that,
and
then you've got the media, then you've got the fans, and then worst of all, we might have the owner or the chair getting a bit sitting a bit nearer you, and think, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
How do you maintain when you're going through that change process and trying to do things differently?
Yeah.
But it isn't quite working for England. It's worked.
Yes.
But that isn't going to happen for everybody.
No.
So for those coaches out there that are looking to create that change and are worried about the fear of losing, the fear of perhaps losing their job if you're employed, or simply that fear of personally not getting it across the line, when you're in that difficult period and there's pressure on and everyone's looking at you, you've had a few losses, what's your advice to them?
Well, it's really important that you manage up and you manage down. So you manage your players by setting clear targets and making sure that you're hitting those targets. So if you're wanting to get a distance, then make yourself with incremental steps. Don't try and go all the distance straight away. But also managing up, speak to the people who are in those positions that are putting you in place to let them know what your direction of travel is and why you're doing that and how long it might take you to get there. If they say, I don't want that, then you might have to decide whether that's where you need to be the coach or whether you look elsewhere to have that opportunity. But you've got to have everybody buying into any credo that any club is trying to do. So that means you have to, as the coach, make sure you're managing up as well as managing down.
Yeah, it's creating a bit of time as well.
Yeah.
And perhaps we just finish off, because it's pivotal. For me, looking in, your appointment as El Presidente of the Yorkies is significant.
I mean,
for you personally, but for the game as well.
Yeah.
We are about to appoint some new non-exec directors, and there will be a movement towards a change in that personnel, particularly gender balance and ethnic diversity. You've held the role now for
April, May, June, July, 4 months.
Is it a pivotal event? And if it is,
I think it's
why?
It's pivotal not only for the game and for Yorkshire, but massively for me. You know, I'm going into places now that I was never a chair at the table. Now I'm welcomed. I think we're still in a situation where I'm welcomed. I'm not always included.
Tell us more about that.
In so much as, you know, I went to a President's Day and we were talking about, you know, we've increased the batting lineup in the President's team, and, you know, the likes of Chris Broad and Mark Rampakash, you know, quite very good, you know, very good players from the past, but I wasn't included in the lineup because obviously scoring runs in the women's game doesn't count as much as the men's game. So that's why I'm saying I was welcomed, but I wasn't included.
Right.
And that's 2023. That was April 2023.
So we're actually referring back to many years ago where a similar thing happened with the selection of the coach. And
yes.
They went for a male despite lack of qualification. So now you're in this very senior role, and that happened again.
Yes.
How did you deal with it?
I think nowadays I call people out, you know, I just challenge people and say, what do you mean by that? Or you are you aware? You know, I went to Scarborough and the president was saying, you know, we've got three internationals in the room for lunch today. And I went, oh, five, don't you mean? And he went, my twin sister and I both played for England. And he was like, he was mortified. So right. I think sometimes it's done innocently. And when it's done innocently, then I sort of understand it. I'm not saying I accept it, but he then changed his speech to say, we've got five internationals in the tent today. But I think it's about us making sure that we don't just ignore it anymore, that we just challenge it and just say, no, you're wrong, because there's five here. And certainly with the president thing, then, you know, he was told that he's missed one out. And I think it is sad that these day and age that people are not educating themselves. I think unconscious bias was bad enough, but I think there are times now where there's conscious bias, and that's absolutely wrong. So I think certainly in Yorkshire, we're encouraging everybody to call things out, whether that's race, gender, elitism, whatever it is. And I think that's the key thing, and I'm encouraging everybody to do that. And I think because I am different to the previous presidents, then it's easier for me to do that.
I'm imagining it might be easier for young people if they are subject to that sort of issue. When they see someone like you at the top that they know they can go to and they will get backing, they're more likely to do it. Do you think that's significant?
Yeah, I think it is. And even silly things like dress code and things like that, you know, because it's very elitist, you know, it can be elitist in cricket, boardrooms, and etc. And I think you need respect and you need kindness, and they're the two fundamentals that you need. But you also need to have a strength and a courage at times to make sure that poor behaviour is not accepted. And that's what we're talking about, is poor behaviour. You know, everybody should have a place at the table, and everybody should be listened to, and it should be, that should be it. It doesn't matter what gender, colour, race you are, you know, it doesn't matter. If you're here, then you've got a voice, and let's hear
it. Are you hopeful for the future for female coaches?
Yes, I am hopeful. I mean, obviously, I've been going now for 40 plus years in the coaching world. I think we have to make sure that we're inclusive too. You know, I think I've said to you many times, I don't fit into the women's coaching groups sometimes, mainly because I'm a lot older than a lot of them now. But I'm also, you know, I am a Christian, and, you know, that drives everything I do. So I don't fit into a lot of the groups, but that's the way it is. You know, I'm still going to be who I am and the direct who I am.
And we've talked a lot about sport, but I know your faith is very important to you. And is that a pivotal? Was there a particular moment where your faith came through and that was very important? Is that a pivotal issue that's non-sporting?
Yeah, I think, yes, it is, in so much as I know that my status is not wrapped up in my sport, because I know who I am. You know, I'm a child of God, you know, and I don't need to worry about what I do. It's more about who I am. Mm. So I always try to be the best person I can be in any situation. And if I don't get a role, well, maybe there's another role coming for me. You know, I've gone... I've rarely interviewed for jobs, which sounds really bad. I mean, latterly I have, but in the past it's been like, oh, can you do this? Can you do that? I was 25 years a teacher. Of course, I did an interview for that, but then I just almost fell into writing the hockey coaching awards, and then...
Fell into it.
Well, you know, I think I said earlier, you know, the head teacher at school sort of said... I want somebody to carry the school forward for 10 years, and that wasn't me. And so I was like, I gave it 2 years. But in those 2 years, I was head of sixth form. I learnt all the technology I needed to at the time. And then I just gave my notice in. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I knew that I couldn't stay at the school. And I went off to India to do a Lord's Taverners investigation into spin bowling. And whilst I was out there, I was contacted by England Hockey saying we need somebody to write the coach awards. So I wrote the coach awards when I came back, and then there was a performance coaching job at England Hockey, and it just went like that, you know. So I'm a great believer that, you know, what happens is all under somebody else's direction, and I've just got to be willing to take the opportunities when they come.
Well, you certainly seem to have taken a huge amount of opportunity. Yeah. It's been an absolute privilege to come and see you, not only to hear your stories, but to be able to pass on some of this massive wisdom to our coaches. So, Jane, thank you ever so much for spending time talking to us today on the Pivotal Podcast.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it. Mother Nature,